Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, Julian Gough is the former lead singer of the 90s Irish band Toasted Heretic, who've just re-released their third album, Another Day, Another Riot. That's not the only reason I'm going to be talking to Julian today, because Julian Gough is now a respected, even revered author who has written novels, plays, children's books, and if you're familiar with the video game Minecraft and that poem that features at the end of Minecraft, well, that was written by Julian also. He's just released the fifth book in his children's book series, Rabbit and Bear. It's called A Bad King is a Sad King. It's Children's Book of the Month all this month in Easons and also a September favourite in Dubray bookshops as well. Anyway, I'm going to talk to Julian about all that right after we hear from his band Toasted Heretic. This, from them, is Galway and Los Angeles. And there you go, that is music from Toasted Heretic. Julian, how are you?
I'm mighty.
Good. Mighty in Berlin, which is where you are at the moment. Julian, that song actually, you know, Galway and Los Angeles. I'm right. You were coming out of the television station in RTÉ and Sinead O'Connor was walking in. Did that inspire you?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. It was a weirdly powerful moment, Dave. It's like I get emotional thinking about it sometimes. Because she was so talented, and you know, she is and was and always will be an incredibly gifted human being, and she was getting eaten alive by the music industry at the time, and we kind of caught each other's eyes. She was coming out of through the revolving doors, and I was about to go in, and she'd just done an interview, and I was about to do one or whatever, and we were in the same sort of position, but coming at it from different angles, and it scared the shite out of me. I was looking at her, thinking she's in trouble, and am I going to be in trouble soon too? And it kind of put me off. It was one of the many things.
Put you off possible stardom in the future.
Me off stardom a little bit. It was like, Jesus, I don't know if this is good for people. And there was a lot of other stuff going on that made me think this isn't good for people. You know, people got quite mangled by the machinery, you know.
Mangled by the machinery, indeed. Well, let's just jump straight forward to right now, what I have in my hand here, which is Rabbit and Bear. A Bad King is a Sad King. And this is not the first one. This is about the fifth one. So first of all, tell me about Ice Bear, who's big and mean and wants to be king.
Aha, okay, Ice Bear. Well, all my books have the Rabbit and Bear books have a new animal arrive in the valley, and then Rabbit and Bear have to kind of deal with the new animal and the problems that might bring up. And in all the books before this one, I had Rabbit and Bear kind of solved all their problems by being kind and compassionate and empathetic and seeing the other side, the other animal's point of view, and getting into a kind of a thoughtful way of dealing with the problem, and it solved the problem. But I realized 4 books into the series that when I was a kid, there were problems I could not solve by being kind and empathetic and nice to everyone. Because some problems are just, when you're a kid, you can't fix them. You know, some people are not nice, cuddly, furry little animals that will, you know, love you if you love them back. And I was thinking, I really need to write a book for kids who have problems that they're not going to be able to fix.
Yeah. Okay.
And how do you deal with that?
So basically, if you're kind and compassionate and you have empathy and all of these things, by the time little Tommy goes off to sleep, this is for kind of 4 to 8 year olds kind of thing, by the time you close the hardback at the back of it and it's off to the land of Nod, etc., they'll be happy because all the problems are kind of signed off by the end of the book. But from your point of view, we're talking about everything from moral difficulty and complexities of the problems, which are overlooked in most of these things, and you have not overlooked them. Is that it?
Yeah, well, I think in a weird way, I think the old fairy tales, which were very cruel and harsh and that, were more accurate in some ways. You know, they acknowledge that life is very tough.
Well, life was very. Yeah. You go back Victorian and further times, and like little kids died all the time, and therefore you think that the kids from years ago were able to take it more, and maybe kids now should be able to take it more?
No, it's more a case of, I think because the kids don't die like flies anymore, we tend to think their life is much easier, but psychologically, it's still really rough. People have alcoholic parents, or they have, you know, violent teachers, or just teachers that just don't get them, don't get their style, don't get the way they think, you know, or they have bullies in the playground that they're afraid to tell anyone about or whatever. You still have. And if you're 5, that's a massive existential, you know, terrifying problem to deal with. So how do you deal with it? So in a way, Ice Bear is the you know, the parent who drinks too much and takes it out on you, or the teacher that kind of undermines and tries to wreck you for weird reasons of their own, or the playground bully or whatever. The problem you can't solve by being kind.
Yeah, so if life can be cruel, which is a fact, and we hide from it maybe a bit too much, that's not necessarily too good. Be nice, yeah, sure, but what if that doesn't solve it, and that's really where we are. Okay, so this new one now, Rabbit and Bearman, this whole series has done, like you, an awful lot. I mean, like, first of all, like you're a celebrated novelist, musician, we'll go back to in a minute or two, but these ones here, the kids' ones, this is a big scene for you. I mean, like, this has been translated now into, what, 40 different languages or something? If so, and I know it is true.
I'm
going to read from page 13, one sentence. I have a bad feeling about this, said Bear. What's that in Swahili, Julian?
I don't do the translations.
Oh,
myself,
you don't do them yourself. All right, okay.
No, but I do deal with some very, very nice translators who agonize over some of the lines because there's you get some funny cultural problems then with
I'd say so.
So on
the cover here, Neil Gaiman, it just says, or on the back of it, I should say, no, it's on the cover, yeah. No, a perfect animal double act, it says on the cover, but Neil Gaiman's there, hurrah for Rabbit and Bear. Like, to have sort of people who are so well respected going thumbs up to your work. I mean, like, didn't you get an email lately from your man who sells more than anybody, Williams?
David Williams was just really nice about my books on his social media, and which is like embarrassing because I was mean about him. Like,
really? Fantastic! I love it.
So he's completely cut the legs from under me.
Yeah, he's got his own back at you. Be nice. You see, it does work.
Extremely nice about my books, and now I actually do like him. And
of course, you do.
I miss being able to not like him. Yeah. So it works. Love and kindness and empathy often work. I'm not putting down love and kindness and empathy. They're the best.
By the way, we're talking to Julian Gough, the great Julian Gough, that is, because the Toasted Heretic I played earlier on, you're back with that as well. But just to stay with the books for a second or two here, because you know, you are in Berlin and have been. You were born in London. You grew up in somewhere, Kilkenny or somewhere, Tipperary, and then you grew up in Galway, and then you went to... Yeah, so just tell me all about it. I mean, like, you know, all the places you've been, they have all informed who you are, Julian, have they?
Well, they have. I mean, they do for anyone, but they had a peculiar effect on me, I think, because I my parents were, you know, a fireman and a nurse, and they left to get jobs, you know, because Ireland had no economy. So they met in the Galty, I think the Galty Moor Ballroom in London or something, and got married and had kids. And then they came back to Ireland, and I came with them because I was seven. And they didn't leave me behind, fair play to them. But I went from this extremely urban, mixed, like, multicultural world in London, where, you know, I fitted in fine. And I was just part of the stew, you know, I was part of the mixture.
Yeah.
And then I came back to rural Ireland, where everybody had sort of, there's only about three names in the village we moved into or moved just outside of, and I stuck out, and I was in this weird monoculture that I didn't understand, even though it was my own country and my own people and my own part of the world. So I had this kind of strange experience of being the, what would you say, the hated outsider, you know, immigrant figure, even though I was from there.
Yeah.
So I had this bizarre experience that was quite painful at the time, gave me a lot of sympathy for the outsider or for the person who isn't understood. So a lot of my books, the Rabbit and Bear books in particular, they really, each book kind of takes a problem I had when I was a child and tries to solve it in a way that's funny and entertaining, but also kind of useful for kids, because I think kids are neglected in this society. We obsess over them and we give them a huge amount of attention in some ways, but I don't think we understand them as well as we should, and I don't think we build society around them the way that we should. You know, there's an awful lot of loving parents who hardly see their kids because they're commuting and working and paying the mortgage, and so we have this interesting mismatch between the healthiest, best housed, best fed, you know, generation of kids in history with the least diseases wiping them out, and they're often lonely and anxious and depressed and unable to navigate the world when they come out the other end of it into adulthood. And there's something has gone wrong with childhood, and I, in a way, I'm trying to help, I suppose.
Okay, well, you have kids of your own. Sophie's about 16, Arlo's 2 or 3 or whatever. And you now live in Berlin and you've gone through, as I say, you know, London, raised in Tipperary, Galway, and then now Berlin as well. So with this book here now, I mean, like, you know, it's Eason's Children's Book of the Month for September. As I say, published, yeah, congratulations, published in over 30 languages, as they say as well. Yeah. And the illustrator here, who gets his name on the cover, yeah, Julian Goff and Jim Field. Jim Field is so highly prized as an illustrator that you've got to wait for your next book because he's too busy working with J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, she poached him for her Christmas book. Yeah, yeah. Which is, you know, fair play. Yeah, Jim is brilliant. I mean, these books are totally about the collaboration between me and Jim. I'm not the same as in a band. A good band is produces songs and albums that are far better than any single member of the band, and you know that from the solo careers of many egocentric frontmen. So children's books, it's the same. The illustrator is hugely important, and in these books in particular, Jim is he's kind of a genius, which is why J.K. Rowling poached him. You're gonna poach the best, you know.
Yeah, they're beautiful
illustrations. So it's a real honour to work with him. Yeah. They're beautiful illustrations.
Okay, like when I came across you first, I mean, we're talking novels, plays and poems, but really it was all about music. And that was Toasted Heretic in the 1980s. Band from Galway, as always we called it, and it was too. And one of the things about it was not just that the music was good, but the letters you used to write with it wasn't even the letters you wrote. They were the most entertainingly funny, erudite, everything else. But the most important thing was, it was the way you wrote. I mean, like, they kind of bled off the page and went upside down and went backwards, like sort of somebody's homework that was. Like, if you did that in the Leaving Cert, you might get naught, you know, simply for presentation.
Oh, I did not do that well in the Leaving Cert, man.
Right, okay, that's fair enough. But they were fantastic. And, like, I mean, it doesn't surprise me what you've gone on to do. But the point is that, like, with all of this, rock and roll or music or whatever you want to call it was the first love of your life. And did you just say, no, I've had enough of that now, I'm going to write books?
Well, it was more it said it had enough of me, you know. I probably would have kept going, man. I would have probably kept going if we could have made a living and fed ourselves.
Well, you did do. I mean, like, you know, the Toasted Heretic played London and Paris and New York. You know, you were cult in France, headlined to 8,000 people in one of your last gigs in Toulouse.
Yeah, we did brilliantly for a completely difficult, cantankerous, awkward indie band from Galway. Yeah. We did very well. Yeah, and we did 4 albums, which is a good run. You know, a lot of guys that signed to major labels never got to the 4th album. So at least we did that. But it was very hard to, you couldn't make a living at it, you know, and the other guys needed to feed their kids more.
Yeah,
you know,
one of the other guys has released an album about 18 months ago. It's really good. Neil Farrell, The Melancholy Thug.
That's a gorgeous album.
It really is.
The Melancholy
Very good,
Thug.
Yeah.
Sewers of Paris. Look it up on whatever your streaming service is. Yeah. And the single off it, if you get a chance to just hear one track.
Is that the one about the guy?
Skeleton Post.
Oh, it's not the one about the guy speaking on the podium in London and shouting at people, no? No, probably
Well, that's
not.
Another great one. No, he's got, listen to the whole album, it's great stuff. Yeah, the Melancholy Thug is Neil Farrell, who wrote half the music with Heretic, and he's doing a beautiful... He's doing some beautiful songs. I've actually heard some of the next.
All right,
he's
got more coming out. Okay, like, but I mean, when you say that, like the music of Heretic and all that, like Songs for Swinging Celibates, Charm and Arrogance and all the rest, you even had a compilation there some time back, which of course I'm sure you came up with the title. Now in new nostalgia flavour.
Well, you know,
all right, I do indeed. Yeah. So I'm going to play a little bit of a track of Satellite Dishes, but just a few bits more I want to talk about here, because where are you now? Is it the kind of a good time for Toasted Heretic to come back out from the bunker with this album changed? Is that it?
Well, the album that we just re-released this year is called Another Day, Another Riot.
Yeah.
And it was a peculiar album at the time, and it didn't make sense in a way. It didn't fit the pop landscape at the time. We had a top 10 hit off it in Ireland, which is amazing and very surprising, but it wasn't really, it didn't make sense. And I think in a weird way, it makes more sense now. I think we actually pulled a track called Satellite Dishes that was never released at the time.
It's perfect for the pandemic, isn't it?
Oh my God, it's the most pandemic song you'll hear. And I've had DJs playing it and saying how much they feel it fits the moment, which is bizarre because it's 30 years old. So I think we wanted to get it back out because it wasn't available at all. People were paying crazy prices for the CD.
Yes, a secondhand copy of the CD on Amazon goes for about $1,000.
Well, it was at one point. I think we've killed the market by putting it on the streaming
services.
Yeah, well,
obviously, yeah.
So I apologise to anyone who was going to retire on their Toasted Heretic CDs. But it was we wanted to give people a chance to hear the songs again. And yeah, it fits the moment in a way that's quite interesting. Yeah. If anyone's making movies out there, by the way, and wants a strangely timeless and yet contemporary soundtrack, we own all the rights to everything, and the rights clearances are going to be very cheap and straightforward. So talk to us.
And where's your Picking Mushroom song?
Oh, did you hear about that?
Yeah.
That is a song we recorded, I think, even before the first album. And the chorus is, got a plastic bucket I could borrow, we're picking mushrooms tomorrow. And my wife thinks it's the best thing we ever did, and we should definitely release it. So we're talking about releasing it. It's also the most embarrassing thing we ever did. I mean, it's the silliest song. It starts with we intro it with a huge live crowd as though we're U2 and I'm Bono, and we sort of take the piss out of U2 and Bono a little tiny, teeny tiny bit, which at the time was the kind of thing we did. So it's crucifyingly embarrassing to listen to now, but it's also kind of brilliant, so we might put it out, yeah.
Well, I don't have that, but I do have Satellite Dishes. Just as like the world we live in now, I mean, do you think, like, you know, if you could call it, I'm going to get very heavy here, a post-religious world in some ways, that the secular technological world is equally, if not worse, as bad?
Look, we've done an awful lot of things right by moving to a kind of secular modernity, and there's a huge number of benefits. And if you're, you know, gay in Ireland, you can see the benefits. And if you're a woman who's, you know, pregnant and in a tremendously difficult situation, you can see the benefits. So there's huge benefits. I'm not going to knock what we've achieved with secular modernity, especially in Ireland. I did not like the Ireland I grew up in. It was very oppressive. But there are other problems that we haven't solved using that approach, and we've created a few new ones. And we can't drop into this very simple-minded, you know, the religious past was completely terrible and the secular modernity is wonderful, versus the religious past was fabulous and we've thrown it away and now secular modernity is terrible. We've fallen into a very simplified version of a really complicated conversation that we have to have, because you can't have the levels of anxiety and depression and suicide and just general unhappiness that we've got in our society and say we've nailed it, we've solved the problem of being human. We have not. And the one problem I have is that some of the more difficult conversations that we need to have are not happening because each side is shouting down the other side and not listening to the best version of what the other side is saying. They're looking for the worst version of what the other side is saying and then dismissing it and sneering at it. And that's very easy to do. And I think social media exaggerates this. I have a kind of a weird policy on social media. If people are fighting, I'll follow the most interesting voices on both sides, even if I disagree with one side or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you get a very rich and complicated picture of the world. And you also realize that the people you're following are not hearing the other side at all. They're hearing a filtered, simplified version of it. And I think one reason the wheels are really spinning on our attempts to solve a lot of our problems is because we've broken the kind of conversation societies need to have in order to solve problems.
Right, good man yourself, Julian. That's a good way to end it. And just before I play Satellite Dishes, just to what's coming up next? I mean, Rabbit and Bear, out at the moment, as I say, it is the Eason's Children's Book of the Month for September, published in over 30 languages. Yeah, go on, Scott, what?
It's got great support from a lot of the indie shops as well. So, you know, Galway, brilliant. Charlie Burns has it. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the books upstairs in Dublin. The Gutter Bookshop and O'Mahony's in Limerick. So get it wherever you love books the most.
Indeed,
you
know, A Bad King is a Sad King is the current edition. It's Rabbit and Bear is what it is. What about I daren't say, but I will just go for it. More kind of adulty stuff? Are you getting back to doing bigger books? Books for bigger people?
I'm doing a book for big people that is kind of, that I've been working on for years behind the scenes, and which is kind of crazily big. I'm trying to re-describe the universe using the kind of skills of a novelist, but drawing on scientific papers of the last 20 or 30 years.
Right, so you've been reading a lot of physics and chemistry and cosmology and astronomy, I presume, have you?
Huge amounts. I mean, reading across a massive number of fields. And I think there's a picture of the universe in it that scientists, for very understandable reasons, are not able to draw. There's a meaning, there's a kind of a a story you can pull out of the data that hasn't been pulled out of the data that's really, really interesting, I think, and that people will find fascinating. So I'm trying to describe the universe.
We will look forward to that, Professor. Julian Gough, it's been a pleasure as usual. The album is out there now at the moment, isn't it? Like the actual title. Is it Another Day, Another Riot?
It's Another Day, Another Riot. We've rejigged the song order a bit and we've added in Satellite Dishes, but it's essentially the same album.
But it is Toasted Heretic.
Rejigged for our time and remastered. It sounds really, really good. And Declan Collins guitar. If you're a fan of guitar, Declan Collins is the man. If you're a fan of interesting kind of arrangements, Neil Farrell's the man. And it's a beautiful album, and I'm glad it's back.
Okay, well, we will look forward to you saving the world with your next novel. And thank you very much indeed. Julian Gough it is. Satellite Dishes is the track I'm playing now from your band. This is Toasted Heretic. Come on, Julian, take it easy.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's always a joy to talk to you.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.